Today on Maine Calling, as the June primary approaches, what matters most to you as a voter? Maybe you've already cast your ballot in the primary election, or perhaps you're still deciding who you'll vote for. There are a lot of names on the ballot, especially for governor, both Democrat and Republican. As you think about your vote, what do you find really matters to you? Are you looking for a candidate with a certain trait, maybe somebody calm and steady, or the opposite, a passionate change maker? Is there an issue that matters to you more today than it did in previous elections? Are you carefully considering how you'll rank the candidates? I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on Maine Calling, we take the pulse of the Maine voter, that's you, and get a sense of how this year's election may differ or be similar to those in years past. Maine Calling is just ahead.
Maine Calling is made possible by support from Rennie's, a Maine shopping adventure with 19 locations across the state, now open in Bangor and Waterville, and Quarry Cottages at Highland Green, committed to providing low-maintenance living and dedicated to creating a community where residents are free to pursue their passions, and Bangor Savings Bank, committed to helping Northern New England communities thrive. You matter more. Bangor.com. And North Yarmouth Academy, a 2025 AP Platinum School recognized by College Board, inviting families to tour campus, shadow a student, and explore its new dormitory.
I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. As Americans, we cast our votes privately, often after much thought and consideration. Today, we are asking you to share not who you plan on voting for, but what factors you are considering. Is it the demeanor of a candidate, a particular issue? Will your ranked choice listing be strategic? Has your thinking changed over the years? We invite you to join the conversation. Let us know what's on your mind in the lead up to this primary election. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, post a comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. Joining me for the hour, University of Southern Maine professor and chair of the Department of Political Science, Dr. Ron Schmidt. Also with us, Sarah Craighead Dedman, who is the former editor of the Machias Valley News Observer and now town manager of the town of Machias. Welcome to both of you. Ron, there are a lot of people who think they know what is going on in the minds of voters, but it seems as though the so-called pundits often get it wrong, at least recently. Am I right?
Oh, yes, you are. And I'm not one of the people who's ever said I know what's going on in the minds of voters.
So why is it so hard to take the pulse of the public? And also, how valuable is it?
You know, we have a tendency to think of polling as though it were a kind of live action documentary where we're following the opinions and the ideas of the citizenry. But at its best, all a poll really gives us is more like a still photograph. It gives us a very clear sense of how the voters feel about a particular issue at a particular moment in time. And we don't necessarily know why they feel that way. We don't necessarily know whether they might be open to changing their opinion. We have some sense of how the political debate shapes that, but it's not a real clear causation. And so a lot of it is impressionistic. And as people's minds change or as our understanding fails to really grasp what's going on, we get surprises. Mm-hmm. And we've seen a lot of very close elections lately in which it doesn't take a whole lot of that kind of movement to change an outcome.
Sarah, you are in Downeast Maine. As first a journalist and now as Machias town manager, I'm imagining you talk with a lot of different people, people who are different ages, different backgrounds. I'm wondering, what are you hearing this year? What do people care about?
So many things, but I do think the primary thing right now is inflation and the economy. The pressure on locals for driving diesel trucks to harbors with the new prices. No surprise, that's all very challenging. But we are also seeing a little bit of fatigue with the current level of discourse. And I'm seeing that with both people on both sides, that they're sort of growing fatigued of all of the political behavior and stepping back a little bit more from it right now. There almost seems to be a little bit of slump-shoulderedness about the pervasive lack of civility and so many things going on, you know, that are challenging at the ground level but don't seem to be getting addressed in Augusta or Washington is what I'm hearing.
And I'm wondering if there are any specific local issues in your part of Maine that will influence how people vote in statewide races or even national races. I mean, we're talking about the primary right now.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, all politics being local, you know, all local taxes are fresh in everyone's mind all the time. So property taxes are absolutely something that are influencing how people think about the election. And I'm hearing a lot of people really concerned about what Augusta can do to alleviate some of that pressure. And of course, we're all very concerned about it here in the various municipalities that I work with all the time. How do we continue to grow this beautiful, amazing place and keep it viable for its traditional occupations while also footing much, much larger bills in many categories?
And that isn't the kind of answer that's a quick one-liner for a candidate, is it?
No, it's not. And in some cases, I think as voters, we may misplace responsibility at different levels, you know, from where it really belongs. But we're all feeling the pinch of affordability right now.
Ron, I personally know people who have spent weeks studying the candidates, especially candidates for governor, and thinking deeply, not only about who they're going to vote for, but how they're going to rank them on the ballot and why. But I know that research shows that a lot of people do the opposite, that they go with their gut instinct right when they're in the voting booth. And I'm wondering, do we know which kind of voter is more common? Which kind of voter is the researcher and the thinker? And which kind of voter is like, yeah, I think I'll pick this person?
We don't necessarily. We do know that the partisan voter is more numerous than either of those two categories. And I mean, that does make sense that We talk about political parties like they're philosophical or ideological movements, but they're really big coalitions of interest groups. And so you sort of figure out what issues you care about and you find people who care about similar ones. And a lot of people let that direct them to make decisions. But there are things that can affect things at choices at the last moment, a particular campaign, a particular tone of a campaign, some sort of an event happening in the news. Name recognition, it can be a really big deal on election day.
All right. Sarah, do you expect a lot of early voting in Machias and surrounding communities? And if so, how do you think that affects the vote?
We are starting to see some early voting. I'm sorry, I have no idea how that affects the vote. I think there's just a lot of people who are eager to make sure their vote is counted and they want to come in here to the town office and get it done as soon as possible. So we saw people rolling in almost as soon as it was possible, but I don't know how it affects the vote. How about you, Ron?
One of the great things about living in Maine, I moved here as an adult, and working in Maine as a political scientist is seeing the results of a state that's so committed to helping its citizenry vote. Things like being able to register to vote on election day is huge.
Yeah.
And the fact that Mainers take advantage of early voting as a way to make sure their votes are counted, I think, is another example of that as sort of part of the political culture of our state.
I'm going to go to a couple of the comments that have already come in. This is an email from Kelsey asking, we put out the question, what are you looking for? And she said, authenticity. When voting this year, I'm looking for someone who's going to do exactly what they say and have a plan to implement going in. Government is working too slow, and we need someone who's ready to hit the ground running and help Mainers who need it now. And then Will on Facebook says, I am inspired by new ideas and viewpoints. So two similar but different perspectives. Sarah, you're nodding. Are you hearing similar comments at town hall?
I really am. I'm hearing a lot of people who are ready for some wholesale change. And I think there's a difference to the tone of it now. That's something we've heard off and on over the decades. But I feel like more and more people feel like it's time for a little bit of a dramatic shift in how things are done. Even as I say that, I'm aware that historically, I think that might be the battle cry of so many different election eras, but I feel like it's different this time somehow.
And Ron, I think this is true for both parties, right? That there is sort of a battle for the future happening, right? Between the people who are really looking for change and the people who are really looking for everything to calm down a little bit.
Yeah, and I think you can see a tension there between, like in Kelsey's point, a desire for accountability and transparency and a desire for a fast radical movement. Those two things don't necessarily go together. But there is a sense that however the system is set up, it's not sufficient to meet the needs of this moment. Our political system was not designed with speed as a foremost concern. It's hard to pass legislation, and it's hard to move big ideas through a system with as many players as ours has. And when there's a lot of stress and strain on the system, it makes sense for people to want to try to find some sort of a fix. And if people who are there now can't do it, it makes sense for them to look for people outside who might be able to. But as we've seen before, that can actually just complicate matters.
Here's an email from Laura. I will be voting based on who I think can win the general election. I will be looking for a candidate that is authentic, pragmatic, has real solutions for the issues of corruption, housing, the economy, healthcare, and reshaping politics. So I'm going to go back to you, Ron, because this is interesting. There are people who vote in the primaries who are being strategic, who are saying which of the candidates, maybe this is not my favorite candidate, but this is the candidate I think will win in November. And there are other people who just vote for their favorite. Do we have a sense of where Democrats and Republicans who are voting in the primaries lie along this spectrum?
Well, one of the interesting things about ranked choice voting, which we're doing in Maine, is that ostensibly, at least, it means you don't have to make that choice. You can still support someone you think is most likely to be able to beat the other party's candidate, and at the same time, still lend support to somebody just because you happen to agree with their positions the most, even if you don't necessarily think that they'll be able to win the general. And so that strategic thought ideally can give voters the sense that, you know, the most likely candidate will probably win, even if they're not their favorite, but that they might be able to have a concrete way to tell that person, I'll vote for you, but these are the things that I really, really care about, and I want to hear that from you.
Mm. Sarah, what do you hear? Do people talk about ranked choice voting, and are they grumbling about it? Are they happy to have the option?
I would say that there certainly are people who are very happy to have it, but there is still a lot of distrust of it and dislike of it, which may fall more along party lines. Washington County is predominantly a red county, and there's been a lot of concern about ranked choice voting ever since it came in. So, and I think there are still some people who are not entirely sure, you know, how it works or if it's effective at doing, you know, so.
Let's see here. I'm going to go to a few more comments. Somebody says cost of living, property taxes causing seniors to sell. And that is what you mentioned, Sarah, what people care about. And somebody else here says illegal immigration. So another issue that's very much in the news that somebody, this is, let's see, John on Facebook said will be their issue. I'm going to go now to John Bolduc, who is a teacher who lives in Lewiston and works in Western Maine. Hi, John. Thanks so much for calling in.
Hi. Thank you for having me.
Now, John, I know that you have not voted yet in the primary. Do you plan to?
I do, yeah. I definitely am planning on participating in the primaries, but kind of late to the game in that I have no idea who I'm going to vote for yet. I just kind of know what I'm looking for in a candidate.
So what are you looking for in a candidate?
Yeah, so I mean, I'm in my early 30s and I, you know, I've been through a couple election cycles. And this is kind of the first election cycle where I'm really looking into what I see, my own personal perspective is a very existential threat to democratic institutions in our country. I see, you know, every day it seems like more and more evidence of, you know, what I see as democratic backsliding in the U.S. And I mean, I used to have, still do have faith in the court systems and some of the checks and balances that we have. But I'm just really, really looking for a candidate who is willing to fight for the democratic institutions that we have and to stop some of the more egregious examples that, you know, that seem to be happening on a more and more frequent basis. So I used to vote a lot for the environment, you know, climate change, and I saw that as an existential threat. But unfortunately, I mean, I would love to vote for the environment, but I kind of see another existential threat sort of bubbling up that is our democracy. So I could say that I'm looking for a candidate who will, you know, quote unquote, fight Trump, but I think it's a little more fundamental than that. I guess I'm looking for a candidate who can fight for, you know, voting rights and fight for the power of the purse and fight for these things that I view as kind of endangered at this point.
So you're looking for a fighter. You're not looking for somebody who's going to play nice necessarily.
Yeah, definitely. I think that we are kind of beyond the point of playing nice. And it was, you know, a good sentiment, I guess, when we could claim that, or when I know I could be like, my party claims the high ground. But I think that, unfortunately, the moment is beyond that. I mean, I don't want someone who's cruel. I think, like, cruelty, unfortunately, in modern politics is very off-putting, but it's everywhere. Just the cruelty of some of the candidates and some of the you know, elected officials that we have now. But I am looking for someone who is willing to fight for what I think makes, you know, the United States the United States.
John, before I let you go, I'm going to toss to Ron Schmidt, our political science professor. Ron, do you have any questions for John as a voter?
I, first of all, I'd like to say thank you for taking your time and making a decision. There's nothing wrong about being this late in the process and not having decided yet. And I also just wanted to say thank you for bringing the question of democracy itself into focus. I went to grad school in the 90s, and I used to feel like all Americans say that they love democracy, but a lot of them don't seem to have thought about what that means. And I feel like now we're at a place where a lot of people are thinking about what democracy means, and a lot of people are thinking that maybe they don't want it. And so I feel like you're right to see that as an incredibly central issue right now. But I would ask, do you necessarily think that you have to choose between candidates who support democracy and candidates who support a sustainable environmental policy?
Oh, no, I think it's kind of fortunate that that seems to go hand in hand with some of the candidates. I think that a lot of the candidates who are, at least from what I can see early on, you know, who would kind of support the democracy also support the environment. I'm just saying, like, it's taken, I never really thought, like, if you were to ask me this, you know, 4 or 8 years ago or whatever, I don't think I ever would have thought that I would be on the front of my mind would be democracy itself. You know,
right.
I was more saying it was on my, like, the environment is always on my mind, but now it's a little bit, there's another existential threat there that I don't think, you know, even 5 years ago, well, maybe 5 years ago, years ago, I would be surprised that it has gotten to where it is, if that makes sense.
John, thank you. Yeah, thank you so much for calling in today. John is a teacher who lives in Lewiston but teaches in Western Maine. Thank you so much for calling in. And Ron, this is, and Sarah, this is part of the reason I wanted to do this program today is because I have a sense that John is not alone, that people, maybe people who are even older than he is, he says he's in the mid-30s, are finding themselves caring about either concepts or issues that weren't their driving reasons for voting for a candidate before. So I'm wondering if you think that's right, or maybe the election will tell us.
What I heard in what John was saying was the sort of not yet sure is a new thing, you know, that we're just less than 3 weeks out from the election. And a lot of people, everyone I talk to, almost no one knows exactly who they're going to vote for, at least in the gubernatorial, you know, primary. And the field is thick. So I think that's a little different. And I want to correct myself a little bit earlier. I said the early voting was taking off, because I encountered a lot of early voters in the parking lot when I was coming in. But I just texted with the real expert, our town clerk, and she actually said it's actually very slow this year. We've only had 15 so far. So I don't know what that indicates, but I think that's interesting.
That is interesting. You ran into all 15 at once, probably.
I was like, wow, people are really hawking that, you know? But yeah, so the real data did not support my perception.
Well, I really appreciate this. We have calls coming in already. We'd love to hear what you have to say. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. How are you thinking about voting this year as we go into the primary, a primary with many candidates, including many gubernatorial candidates? This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, we want to hear from you. What matters to you this year as a voter? Are there issues or priorities that you find yourself returning to as you think about the candidates? Do you find yourself thinking about this election maybe a little differently than elections past? Joining me for the hour, Sarah Craighead-Dedman, who is town manager in Machias and former editor of the Machias Valley News Observer, and Ron Schmidt, professor and head of USM's Department of Political Science. We invite you to join the conversation. Share your perspective, not just about which candidate you're voting for, but what you are prioritizing. Send a brief email, talk@mainepublic.org. Comment on Facebook or Instagram, or give us a call at 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to Frederick calling from Bath. Hi, Frederick. Go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer and guests. What a wonderful program for you to have. I am looking for a change maker, a systemic change maker, someone who sees that the economy is broken, that our entire democratic system, I feel, is being overrun by greed and private profit. And there's a senator from Vermont who's gotten a lot of people excited. Bernie Sanders has come out with endorsements of two candidates, of course, Graham Plattner. And do you want me to mention who I'm supporting?
Oh, it's fine. It's fine if you mention the names. I mean, I don't want to make the conversation about the names of people, but we're welcome to mention it.
So I'm wholeheartedly behind Troy Jackson and of course, the other major three candidates are incredibly, I think, incredibly worthy of people's support. But Troy, having been raised in the paper industry, the timber industry, understands completely working class issues. And I think working class anymore is anyone who's having an economic problem, is having a problem meeting bills, paying for a mortgage, not being able to afford a house. These are all working class concerns. And it stems from a private profit motive in corporate capitalism that now owns democracy to the point that our president is running a war in the Middle East. And we
Frederick,
don't
it sounds to me as though when you say somebody who understands working class values, the experience, the personal experience in the working class matters to you. And Sarah, I'm wondering if part of what Frederick says, you did say that there are more Republicans in your neck of the woods than probably in Frederick's neck of the woods. But is the way he's talking something that you are hearing?
Absolutely. And it crosses parties. The what is a perceived disregard for the impacts on the residents of, you know, the United States, really, financially. I've heard people on both sides of the aisle expressing a very similar sentiment to Frederick's.
And Ron, this is sort of the big kahuna this time around, isn't it? Not just here in Maine.
Yes, very much so. And it remains an important issue as we head towards the election. There's not a clear sense among the American people, I think, as to what to do about this. But I think there's a very clear sentiment that this is a problem. So when you have, you know, the Speaker of the House, Speaker Johnson, talking about the difficulty of being able to make it on $175,000 a year, but not necessarily endorsing more broad economic policies to deal with accountability. You can and affordability. You can understand the level of frustration that we heard in earlier callers.
Frederick, thank you so much for taking the time to call in. We're going to go now to Aaron Britt, who is the publisher of the Midcoast Villager. Aaron, welcome back to the show.
Thank you very much.
And so you represent or you cover the part of the Midcoast that's sort of Camden, Rockport, Rockland, Lincolnville. Is that right?
That's right. And up to Belfast, Knox and Waldo County.
Okay. So you've been asking your reporters what they've been hearing from readers and people in the communities about what's top in mind. Share a little of what you've heard.
I think I'm sure I'll echo some of what we've already heard, but it's a lot of the classic pocketbook stuff we hear about. Housing, affordability, cost of groceries, cost of gas. And then I think another important one is the what happens to rural communities when we have less healthcare to choose from. A lot of our readers are concerned about less service and less care. That's a big one. I think I would add another, which I've seen primarily from people writing in. We get loads of letters to the editor. And right now, people are writing in to endorse various candidates, to encourage other citizens to vote for them. And a key piece that I've seen again and again in those letters is focusing on candidates' character and temperament. Yes, you're hearing about, I like this person because of their policies, but a lot is about how they treat people, what their character is like. Do they listen? Are they trying to score cheap points? Or do they actually seem to have the civic good in mind? That one really jumped out at me from a lot of our letters.
Yeah, so this character and temperament, Ron, is this kind of a gut feeling kind of thing?
It is, and it's a hard thing to make work in a consistent way because for a lot of voters, politics is not something they think about until the heat of campaign season. And then most of what they might see could be coming at them, you know, on their phones. We have a lot of town hall activities in Maine, and there's been a lot of that this year. So we have an increased chance that voters have at least seen candidates, but really getting a sense of a candidate is hard to do if you don't get a chance to spend time following their career and not just, you know, the headlines.
And Aaron, I'm wondering, I know that all the candidates have made trips to your part of Maine. Are you seeing bigger turnout or smaller turnout than usual for the kind of events that happen during primary campaigns?
I think we've seen really good turnout, and that ranges from folk running for statewide office all the way down to some of our smaller candidates. We've got a forum at the Villager Cafe tonight for two candidates running for state rep, and you know, they're out and about, they're knocking on doors, and we've seen people really turn out to try to understand, you know, who wants to represent them. And I think they are looking, to go back to that temperament question, that is big for people right now. They want to feel like they can connect with and that the folk that they want to vote for represents sort of what they want to see, the tone they want set in representative government.
Aaron, thank you so much for calling in. That was Aaron Britt, who is publisher of the Midcoast Villager. Let's see, we'll go to Mike, who's calling from Westbrook. Hi, Mike, go ahead.
Hello, Jennifer. Thanks for taking my call. What I'm looking for is someone that anybody can go in there and blow up the system or claim to do that. But I want someone that has been in the office, knows how to make the sausage, so to speak, that's held public office before and done the work. And also someone that's going to represent my interest, the public, greater public good. I know that business is well organized, and they have their candidates and the people that they push forward. And so just I look at the resumes and not just what they're claiming.
You look at their resumes. Mike, I'm so glad you're the first person to have said that so far this hour, looking for experience. I'm going to turn it back to our guests, Ron and Sarah. Ron, this used to be something that a lot of voters would say. How common is Mike these days, or how, or is he now an outlier?
It's an excellent point he raises. I mean, there's this tendency in American politics. It's like that old movie Dave, you know, to want to freshen up the system by bringing in somebody completely from outside. But holding office is actually really a difficult task. I mean, it's the work that we demand of legislators and executors and regulators is difficult and requires being able to work well with lots of other people. And this moment, a lot of voters don't privilege the skills that are actually really necessary for that. I always tell students, you know, when you hear a candidate talking about politics with disdain and then asking for their vote, you know, imagine trying to decide on a course from a professor who says that he loves being a professor, but he hates grading and lecturing and coming up with syllabi. It doesn't really make sense.
Yeah. Sarah, thoughts?
Yeah, I do think that it is not a common thing to think about whether or not they have the, you know, the capacity or the experience to really work the machinations of government. I don't see people considering that all the time. I think that there are a lot of people around here who are starting to say that, particularly as we're looking at the race between Plattner and Collins. That is coming up more and more as people weigh those alternatives. Yeah, I think it's a good development, though, because, I mean, just speaking as a very low level government administrator, there is a lot to know.
Yeah, I was just about to ask you, going from being a journalist to being a town manager. Are you thinking, do you want to say to all of us there's more to it than you think?
Yes, I do often, you know, I think like, you know, the range of legal considerations that enter into just even administering a municipality is different. I don't have, you know, campaign handlers or staff that, you know, are going to, so I'm sure it's different at the Senate level, but there is a lot to government, and I am, you know, hearing people weighing whether or not that is more important to them now, because on the other hand, there's always the appeal of the outsider. And a lot of people I'm talking to are especially looking for a business-oriented outsider right now for Maine.
Mike, thank you so much for calling in. We'll go down to Scarborough and Laura. Hi, Laura, go ahead.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to say quickly that I would vote for any candidate, regardless of party, and at any level, who would commit to upholding the Constitution and its amendments at this point. And I am not like your younger, more idealistic 33-year-old caller earlier. I'm 58 years old, and I never thought that this day would come where, you know, the principles upon which democracy was founded would be trampled left and right. So that would be my comment, and I'll take the rest of
the Well, Laura,
line.
Before you go, I want to ask you, how are you determining? Like, how are you figuring out which is the candidate that's going to best uphold the Constitution?
So, that's kind of what I'm saying. It's like, they're not, like, if somebody would make that statement, you know, hopefully we can believe it. If somebody would make that statement, that would be great. That would be very helpful to me. I don't feel like anyone has made that statement, although I also am kind of doing a last minute thing and I haven't done all of my research yet, but I am a researcher and I would, you know, be looking at resumes as well.
Yeah. Well, so Ron, but I think Laura makes a point. This is not what candidates campaign on. They don't walk around saying, I'll uphold the Constitution. But maybe they ought to this year.
It was only a few years ago that the president actually called in a public statement called for suspending the Constitution. I think maybe since 9/11, it's been more common to sort of entertain this idea of, since we're in crisis, suspending the rules, or our politics is, you know, particularly based on ambition and contest. So maybe it makes more sense to some people to think of winning as more important than the basic rules. But Laura is right. There's an increasingly freewheeling attitude towards the basic set of laws that underpin our political system. And it is worrying. Habit eventually is what produces change and the disruption or the replacement of systems.
Thank you, Laura, for your call. And if you have a comment, if you want to share what you're thinking about right now in this primary election season, we'd love to hear from you. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back. Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We are interested in hearing from you today and finding out why. We're always interested in hearing from you, but especially today, why are you voting if you're voting, and how are you thinking about voting during this primary election? Our guests, USM political science professor Ron Schmidt and Machias town manager Sarah Craighead-Dedman. We want you to share your comments and questions via email, talk@mainepublic.org. You can also post on Facebook or Instagram or call 1-800-399-3566. We have two callers from a new organization called Just ME for Just Us. So Just Maine for Just Us, which is a rural youth voter group. Isabel Rogers, you're up first. Tell me what you're, how old are you and what are you thinking about during this election season?
25 years old, and yeah, I am looking forward to voting, and it's something that I feel very passionate about as a young person living in rural Maine. I see, especially as like our towns are feeling kind of divided during this polarized political time, I think rural communities are really leading the way in bringing communities closer together, and I think voting is a way we can do that and kind of bridge the divides that we are seeing as people.
And, so interesting. So are you, would you say it's accurate to say you're looking for candidates that might bring people together?
Yes. I think it's really important to uplift youth voices and those of working class people and candidates that value that and want to listen to rural people's perspectives. And uplift younger generations, I think, are really at the forefront of my mind.
Isabel, thanks for calling in. Isabel Rogers, and now Bella Sturdivant from the same group, Just ME for Just US. Bella, how old are you? And I should have asked Isabel, but where do you live and what are you thinking about this election season?
Hi, I'm 19, and I live in Leeds, Maine, but I go to school in Waterville at Thomas College. And this election season, I am really, as Isabel said, looking for someone who prioritizes young people's voices, but also definitely making sure that they prioritize rural Mainers, and Wabanaki sovereignty is really important to me, as well as environmental priorities, obviously.
Now, it's interesting to me you mentioned Wabanaki sovereignty and environmental priorities, because I believe that at least all of the Democratic candidates for governor, but also many of the Republican candidates for governor have expressed that, given the fact that they do share the same view on some of the issues that matter to you. What's your next step? How do you discern between the different candidates?
Yeah, I think really it's a matter of personal preference. But for a lot of, I would say it's really important to feel like the candidate is listening and will actually follow through on their promises. So if that doesn't if they don't feel authentic or it doesn't feel like they're listening to Wabanaki people as well as Wabanaki youth, that's something that I wouldn't believe in voting for someone like that.
Well, Bella, thanks so much for calling in. Ron, you teach young people predominantly. Do the two callers we just heard from, do they reflect what you're hearing?
Yes, for all the, and it's not just talk, I've seen polling, but for all the talk about the intense partisan polarization in the U.S., I found young people in the last 10 years to be kind of desperate for a certain amount of level-headed coming together around issues of common interest, or at least venues in which issues of common interest can be discussed. And it's heartening. Things get pretty grim these days, but voices like Isabel's and Bella's are I think, a sign that things will get better.
All right. We're going to go to Maureen calling from Bangor. Hi, Maureen. Go ahead.
Hello. I believe that our system of government is now so broken that we need a radical change. And what I propose is that we select our representatives just like we do our grand juries, which is a random selection. of the people of the in grand juries. It's the county in it would be the districts of in Maine for Congress and the Senate, and that no one can influence them, just like a juror. If you try to influence a juror, that's jury tampering. I think we should send random people, you know, and some people wouldn't be able to do it because of travel or family or whatever. But those who can, then they should be have their term and then be done. And no one can influence them, period.
Maureen, thank you. Ron, this would take a big change in the Constitution, right?
It probably couldn't happen. But it's, I mean, you know, that's kind of how the ancient Athenians did it. But I would note that some people's influencing is another person's representation, right? If people are considering doing a project that would impact my town, I would have feelings about that and want to be able to talk to them. If that had to do with a criminal case, that would be clearly inappropriate. But if it had to do with, say, zoning, not so much.
An email here from Rob. I'm a registered independent. I vote on my core values. And when I vote, which is always, I'm looking for a candidate who speaks truth to power and who can build a movement. My core issues are the environment, true freedom, and affordability. That's really interesting, Rob. Thank you so much for emailing in. I'm interested in this phrase, true freedom, because, Sarah, when you talk about something like freedom, boy, it means different things to different people, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And in Washington County, I think, you know, a lot of it has to do, you know, people here live rurally by choice as much as anything. And they want the freedom to, you know, own their homes outright and hunt and fish and, you know, recreate and do those things with, you know, minimal, they want small government, you know, and I think that's a lot of what it means here. Though it's certainly, you know, we have a lot of voices here.
Ron, thoughts on how people interpret the word freedom?
Yeah, etymologically, freedom shares roots with the word friend. And freedom does sort of imply being able to stand on your own, but it also suggests the need for some sort of a community, because there's only so much we can accomplish one-on-one. As a previous caller put it, there's a real pragmatic aspect to freedom, which is that accomplishing the things that make us feel more free, our roads, for example, is not something that we can do as isolated units.
An email here from Cody. I will be factoring affordability, increasing primary housing for residents, and access to health care in the upcoming primary. Additionally, I'm hoping candidates are considering increasing Maine's workforce by retaining the talent we have and recruiting new talent to the state. Bruce emails, when I was young, my mother taught me to remain undeclared so that I could vote in either primary in Massachusetts, because every once in a while you want to vote for the dog in one or the other party, she would say. And yeah, Sarah, we can do that now. If you are not a declared voter, you can go vote in a primary. And that's new. I mean, I'm wondering how many. Do you sense that people know that people are thinking about it, that people are, you know, you're shaking your head?
I don't think people know that. And my father did the same thing in New Hampshire. So I was raised by the same kind of person who would flip around to vote accordingly. But no, I think we need to keep getting the word out that unenrolled voters can cast a vote in the primary this year. It's a big move.
And Ron, Bruce said that Bruce is unenrolled and Rob says registered, independent. When I moved to Maine 32 years ago, that was the largest block of voters. More people not enrolled in a party than enrolled. That's not the case anymore, is it?
It's not, but it's still a pretty large number. But it is also the case, at least nationally, that about a third of independents tend to almost always vote Democratic, and about a third tend to almost always vote Republican. So to some degree, this has to do with how people see themselves as citizens, more than it has to do with how they vote.
We'll go to Maura calling from Falmouth. Hi, Maura, go ahead.
Hi, Jennifer. Thank you for taking my call, and thank you, panel. So I'm looking at real life experience of the candidates, and I'll just go ahead and say I like Graham Plattner and Troy Jackson for each of their experience. And I have to say, even though Graham Plattner is getting some flack from comments he said about women previously. We don't have any Vestal Virgins here. We don't have people who are absolutely pure. So we need to be more realistic. I'm looking for someone who has real life experience that is similar to mine, you know, that they've walked a mile in my shoes. I'm a single mother, and money's always been an issue. And then I'm a woman, I'm interested in equality, and I feel like the aftermath of Roe v. Wade has been horrible. I hate the dirty money and the dirty tricks in politics, like Elon Musk isn't $290 million. Yeah. And I really hate the gerrymandering and eliminating the brown and black people's ability to participate in their government.
Yeah, so more, a lot there. I want to try to unpack a little bit of that before we run out of time. Sarah, first caller to mention Roe v. Wade. Not something people are talking about in the Machias Town Hall as well?
Not as much as the affordability and housing issues, but I did hear that in some of the people I spoke to casually before this, and some larger level issues like the environment. Those are still weighing on local voters' minds, for sure. But I do think the economic pressures right now are front of mind.
Mm-hmm. And Ron, anything from Maura's comment that jumps out to you?
He reminded me of something John Adams said once, where he said that to be really representative, a legislature should be like a portrait in miniature of its community. And his idea was, you know, it takes farmers to know what farmers need. It takes fishermen to know what fishermen need. And I would say on top of that, that sometimes it does take, for example, women to fully appreciate the scope, the devastation of a decision like the one that overturned Roe v. Wade. And seeing more of that in a legislature isn't just a question of sort of performing difference. It's a question of bringing lots of different perspectives to the table when we decide what we're going to do together.
Maura, thanks for your call. An email here from Anthony. Lifelong Republican voter will no longer support any candidate that is not taking active measures to end U.S. involvement in the ethnic cleansing and genocide of the people of Palestine. Also, no support for pointless and mostly counterproductive wars of choice. So, Anthony, thanks for sending that. And Sarah, first comment about international relations, international actions. And I'm wondering, in Machias, how often are people talking about Israel and Palestine? Are they talking about Ukraine?
They are, particularly Israel and Palestine, and particularly the young people that I'm familiar with are deeply, deeply attuned to that issue. Also, I spoke to someone in the contractor industry this morning who said he's really hearing a lot of war fatigue, that we've already spent a lot of years in the wars, and that even some of the, you know, he himself being more conservative, traditional Republican voters are feeling a little, you know, bit of fatigue about Iran, too.
Interesting. We'll go to Sydney and Chuck. Hi, Chuck. Go ahead.
Hey, good afternoon. Thank you for your program. It's awesome. I'm a former Republican. I used to be a Jeb Bush appointee in Florida, and served on a number of commissions as a Republican, lifelong Republican. And recently I switched to independent. And it's because of the divisive rhetoric of the party and the inability of members to go above party rhetoric and getting into not getting into the real issues, which I think are the debt, education, and health care. So I'm looking for people on either party that are willing to roll up their sleeves and work together to tackle the real issues rather than the divisive name calling and the fear mongering that I've watched occur over the last couple of years.
Chuck, I really appreciate you calling in. Ron, it occurs to me Chuck will likely be our last call of the hour, but so interesting that he said the debt, education, and health care. Again, different issues than we're hearing from other voters. Really interesting to me, the variety of issues that we're hearing matter to people.
Yes, but very much related. I mean, a couple years ago, everything worked out great, but I had a couple of health crises hit me as a surprise in the middle of nowhere. And that hit every aspect of my life, right? Until things sort of ironed out. That's the kind of thing that can turn to crisis. So his point was was, I think, very well made.
Chuck, thank you for your call. And thank you to everybody who took part today. What an interesting conversation. Our guest for the hour, Dr. Ron Schmidt, a professor and head of USM's Department of Political Science, and also Sarah Craighead Dedman, Machias Town Manager, former editor of the Machias Valley News Observer. Today's sound engineer was Chris Bridges. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. Tomorrow on the program, a fun one. We are talking about pet names as part of our series, Name Calling on Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you have been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.